The EFL Championship player of the season was Crescencio Somerville, wasn't it? He's a, you know, outstanding player. He's not number one in our rankings, though, is he? The player who is now number one in our rankings was also number one in our rankings after week 21. So there's obviously a consistency there throughout the season. So is it fair for us to say that this player ranked number one would be our EFL Championship player of the season or attacking player of the season?
I think he'd be as good as anybody, wouldn't he, Tom?
Yeah, he would be. And that was... Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 35 of the Attacking the Championship podcast. My name is Tom Busfield. I'm your host. And as always, let me welcome our resident guest. He's our certified data analyst. He's a scout, an FA licensed coach and intermediary, David Bromley. How are you, David?
Well, I'm all right, Tom, but I'm a bit jealous, to be honest. I'm sitting here looking at you with all your bright flowers and sunshine behind you.
Did this on purpose, of course. Yeah. I'm currently out in southern Portugal at the moment, so I'm lording that over you at the moment, David. It's been really nice, actually. It's been really nice. Good to get a bit of sunshine. It's been a pretty dark, wet, cold winter. So, pretty pleased to be getting a bit of sunshine, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you are. And it's a place that I was just reminding you before we started that I've actually been to, but I won't say how many years ago or how many decades ago. So, I know what it was like then, and I'm sure it's...
It's lovely.
It's a beautiful place.
Carvoeiro, I think it's pronounced. Yeah. And it's a really, really nice place. So I'm doing my little bit for the Carvoeiro Tourist Board. Well worth a visit, that's for sure. And they've got the best gelato shop down in the town that you have ever seen. It's amazing.
You're not winning any friends, mate.
I'm definitely gaining a few pounds, though, that's for sure.
Wow.
But it's all good fun. But the championship season does not stop, does it? It just keeps rolling on, and we're really getting to the business end now. We did some predictions last week, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
So how about if I hand that over to you and you take us through how well we got on?
Well, it's kind of you to hand it over because I'll try and make my predictions sound slightly better than they were. They were just diabolical, really. It was a man versus machine thing last week, wasn't it? Where you were sort of using your knowledge of the championship and a bit of common sense and maybe a little bit of bias here and there, natural bias. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to be completely non-discretionary and use it was a very simple algorithm, but it was an algorithm based on recognizing the home team's likely to be stronger and the teams higher up the league are likely to be stronger than the ones down the bottom. So it's very basic, but it was just trying to come up with some results based on that kind of thing. And it was diabolical. I mean, I think I used the word futile last week. We knew that trying to predict the scores was going to be pointless, really, but we did it for a bit of fun, didn't we? But I thought maybe, you know, to predict the results, home win or draw or away win, we might have a bit more luck. And you didn't do too badly, but mine, we gave ourselves 3 points for a correct score and 1 point for a correct result. I got the princely sum of 5 points from the 12 games. So
I didn't smash it, though, did I? I got 8 points, wasn't it?
You
got
8 points. No, I mean, you got two correct scores and I got one correct score.
That's right.
Sheffield Wednesday won, Stoke won. We both got that one, didn't we?
Yeah,
both you got Bristol City won, Huddersfield won. And then beyond that, you got a correct result. You predicted Millwall would win at home to Cardiff and Swansea would beat Rotherham.
It's not rich pickings, is it?
No, it's not. Well, it's not, but I'm not going to say too much because I only got Southampton beating Watford. But I was thinking about it, you know, I mean, joking apart, it was a weekend of real unpredictable. We go on about the championship, don't we? Talk about how unpredictable it is, and that makes it dramatic, and the drama makes it entertaining. Mm. And we watch football because we want to be entertained. So it all feeds into this, what we think football should be about. And that's all very well and good. But I think this weekend just gone was the epitome of that. And it started on the Friday night, didn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
With Plymouth 1, Leicester 0.
Yeah.
So I suppose, though, if you think about it now, after the event, Leicester's recent form's been pretty much like that, hasn't it? I mean, I don't know what's happening with Leicester.
It's a really strange one, isn't it? Because they were so, so dominant for so much of the season, maybe, you know, 75% of the season. And just recently, it's just been tailing off. And I'm not sure, I mean, I haven't seen many of their games. I must admit, I've been more looking at other teams. You just wonder what's changed. You know, what's different? How have they turned from being such a potent attacking force to really they seem to be struggling to score goals right now?
Well, they have in the last few games. I think the last 10 games, they've won 3.
Wow.
And they've lost 6, which is just incredible. You just wouldn't have believed it, would you?
No,
going back,
not at all.
You know, going back even 10 games ago, you'd have said they won't lose 6 between now and the end of the season. Or even 3, probably. But it's
we had them when we did our prediction, didn't we? We had them ending up on 114 points. That was the sort of form that they were in. And at the moment, they've struggled to hit 90 at the moment.
I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, they've got West Brom on Saturday, so it's not going to be an easy one. They've got Preston the away on the following Saturday, and then the last game of the season, home to Blackburn. So It's typical Championship fare, isn't it?
Two tough games there, the next two, aren't they? You know, West Brom are no mugs and Preston are just a tough side. So if you've got any two teams that you probably would rather miss, it's going to be West Brom, who really need a result to try and cement that playoff place, and Preston, who have just been tough and just dogged and hanging in there all season, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, I think probably, you know, Preston have... the likelihood is that they'll if ever a team is on the pitch by then, there probably will be. But even so, going there, it's not a game you'd have picked out, would you? And said, we fancy that. So, I mean, but in answer to your question, what's changed? It can only be the pressure, can't it?
I think
it can only be just the sort of everybody's breathing down our necks. We've got Leeds on what was a great run. We'll come on to them. Mm-hmm. We've got Ipswich is still refusing to lie down.
Yeah.
Southampton have hit good form. And presumably they're just, I know the fans have been sort of, they've been critical even when they were winning, haven't they? About the style of football. And so I can only imagine that's, it's all built up and they're just finding it, getting it over the line is, as we always say, really, don't we? That's the hardest bit.
Yeah, it's those last two steps, isn't it, to the finish line. Sometimes it's too simple just to continue doing what you were doing before. You see it in all different sports, athletics as well.
Yeah.
You see a runner dominating 100 metres for the 95 metres, and all of a sudden it hits them, the realisation that they're going to win. And all of a sudden, what they've been doing, their form breaks, their technique goes, and they finish fourth or something. It can only be a mental error, can't it? Because, the players of Leicester are still good players. That doesn't change week to week, but it's the application, maybe the tactical side of it. Maybe other teams are figuring them out a little bit.
Or they're overthinking it a bit and trying to be too precise. I was just having a quick look at the stats. Obviously, we shouldn't take anything away from Plymouth because that was a terrific result for them and one they really needed as well. Yeah. So you can't, there's a danger that you go on about these things and you forget the fact that, there's two teams in the contest. I think Leicester had 70% of the play, of the possession, but that's going to be somewhat related to the fact they went a goal down and Plymouth would have done what teams do these days. When they go a goal ahead and sort of say, right, okay, now it's over to you sort of thing. But they had 17 shots to Plymouth's 5, only 4 on target, and Plymouth had 3 on target. They created 3 clear-cut chances. Yeah. So they were dominant, but not dominant enough. And it's say, interesting, hats off to Plymouth.
You mentioned about Plymouth there. A couple of episodes back, we looked at their style of play under Stephen Schumacher and their style of play under Ian Foster.
Yeah.
And under Schumacher, they pressed the least, didn't they? They hang back, and we would imagine that they would get back into their formation and then try and hit teams on the break. So you're not going to have loads of possession playing that way, are you? So perhaps they're now just going back to what they always felt most comfortable with. And that's why they're picking up these good results at home like they were under Schumacher.
Yeah, and aren't they just? I mean, looking at that end of the table, it was equally, we couldn't really have called that either. Well, I couldn't have called any of it, but that was the beginning of the weekend, and the weekend carried on in that light, didn't it?
Yeah.
Leeds and Blackburn, Leeds again, dominant, but Blackburn getting the result there up at Elland Road. Nobody much would have called that one.
No, for sure.
Birmingham and Coventry, not only did Birmingham pull off a win, but they took them to pieces, really, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
That
goal difference could pay a big dividend, couldn't it? Because it's going to be so close down there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fact, I wouldn't say it's more exciting, but it's equally as exciting at the bottom as it is at the top, isn't it?
For sure.
If you're involved in it, particularly, but it's shaping up to be a last day nail biter.
Without doubt.
Above Rotherham, there's three or four teams within a couple of points of each other. And it looks as if, to me, it could well stay like that till the last day. So, yeah, you say, I mean, well, and I think we were talking earlier, West Brom were the other team at the top that, you didn't really expect a Sunderland win there.
No.
And there was an explanation for that game with West Brom going a man down.
Mm-hmm.
Just before they went a goal down, and that obviously changes things.
Yeah, it's a massive swing, isn't it?
Really, when you look at all the results, you've got Ipswich not managing to rush Middlesbrough off like I said they would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I thought they'd get one win all. As well.
Millwall got their home win.
That was obvious, David. That was always going.
That was obvious, wasn't it, I suppose, yeah. but yeah, so really, it was a good weekend of drama, especially if you're not too sort of tied up with the results, and you can just watch it as a neutral. You, as you rightly say, got 8 points, which is 22% of the total available points. So we could have, the maximum would have been 3 points we would have awarded each other per game.
Mm-hmm.
So you got 22%. I got a measly 14%. And it got me thinking. Uh-huh. I was thinking, well, that's pretty poor. But then, we're all saying that this division's difficult to predict and everything. But I thought, well, I wonder if I just produced a random score generator. I don't think I could have done much worse than that. If I had just rolled, first of all, I was thinking if I had just rolled a dice, I probably wouldn't have done any worse. So I produced this random score generator, and it's only a bit of fun, really. But so I've used that to predict some results for this coming Saturday, and it's not a completely random. It takes into account the home team and the away team, and it takes into account. It looks back at the beginning of the season and says, okay, put all of the teams into a group depending on the predictions at the beginning of the season, because we use that, don't we, in our analysis. We use the expectation, where were they expected to finish, and it gives us some indicator of the strength of the team. You don't want to do it after the event, of course, because then then you're sort of feeding in what they call post-dictive errors. So you're feeding in information you couldn't have had at the beginning. But so I use the predictive situation. So I take the bookies indicators and of who's the strongest. And so I used those things. But within the scope of that, I generated random scores. And I thought, wonder what would happen if I went back over the last half dozen seasons and just applied this random score generator to all of the games and just to see what percentage of the actual scores it got right. So imagining that we'd done this for the last five full seasons and this season, and the average was 19% over the all of the five and a, well, nearly six seasons. So puts into context how bad mine was. You know, even the random score generator would have beaten mine every season. So, and it didn't vary much. So 2018, 19 was 18%, and it went between 18 and 20% every year. Mm,
yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, so that it is just interesting takes, in itself.
Yeah, well, it does. And I was sort of thinking, well, you know, we're always talking about how unpredictable the championship is. And I must admit, you know, I haven't taken a close enough interest in the rest of the football league, leagues one and two, and or even the Premier League, to really know, well, how unpredictable is the championship compared to other leagues? Because we sort of think it is, don't we? We get that feeling that it is. And I don't know the answer to that. So maybe that's what one for the future. But yeah, so it's just a little bit of messing about, really. But so that was my algorithm. I didn't think I would use that one again.
There's words that we could use to describe it, but,
there
but
are.
Maybe we'd have to edit those out. But
we might have to.
But the,
yeah.
The thing is, though, David, is we always say, don't we, that you have to start with something. You have to start with a process of some sort. So
yeah,
we've always got the chance to refine it and change it and improve it as we go past, as we go along. So, I mean, even you look at things like VAR. You know, it started off and it's pretty dire. But it is a good thing. It is going to make a positive change to football once they figure out how to bloom and use it properly, you know, like rugby do and rugby league and tennis and what have you. So, but you have to start with it being not optimal in order to then refine it and change it, don't you?
You do, yeah. You've got to have a, as you rightly say, with having a process is usually better than not having a process for anything, isn't it? Because you've got a degree of consistency and you've got something that you can interrogate. You know, how did I do this thing? So if you have a process and you can see how you did it, you can identify things that didn't go well and you can pick it apart and you can improve it and so on. So, yeah, you're right. It is better than VAR will one day. I'm not sure when that's going to be. I mean, the only thing I don't like about VAR, really, I like the principle of it, but the thing I don't like about it personally is I've never felt that we were ready for it. I've never felt that the technology was quick enough, and I really, really don't like this sort of waiting around every time a goal scored to see whether it's going to be confirmed or not.
You know, I've digressed us onto this subject, but the way I would like to see VAR used is I'd actually like it to be used only at match speed. With the referee saying what the on-field decision is. And if within a certain time period, the VAR official doesn't get a view which he can definitely say goes against that on-field decision, then you just keep the on-field decision. And I still feel that eventually they'll be able to do that at match speed. Mm. And maybe the referee will say, ooh, possible penalty there, but my on-field decision is no penalty. Can you just have a look at that for me and carry the game on as they go? Or they give a penalty and then there shouldn't be any more than a 30-second break between it being given and maybe being overturned or just going ahead with the penalty kick. I think that has to be the way to go because I see that work really well in rugby union. And it just seems to be the communication is poor between the video match official and the on-field official. It just doesn't seem to be in plain English. I mean, there was the Tottenham-Liverpool one, wasn't there, where it was just half words, half sentences, like delay, 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 delay. So what does that even mean? You know, what does that mean? Just say what your decision is, stop the game, and then let them, you know, disprove it. And if they can't, then you just carry on with what you're doing.
But the trouble with your plan is it's just too sensible. It makes too much sense, so that'll never happen.
it's a shocker, isn't it?
In all seriousness, absolutely. You've got to. I don't think we're quite there, are we? The idea, the sentiment is right that we want to try to use technology to improve the inevitable human error that arises because it's important to people. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we want to materially impact the flow of the game, the excitement of the game in trying to, you know, go to the nth degree. So, yeah, something like what you've suggested would be, I think, probably where we'll end up. I hope so.
I'll put it in the suggestion box for the Premier League, see if that will happen.
Good luck with that. I don't know. Did you give a bit of thought, or do you want me to tell you what I think the scores are going to be of these games?
Yeah, go for it. Because I quite like the idea of maybe actively working on this algorithm thing.
Yeah.
And see how it goes week to week and whether we can tinker with it and change it and see if we can start getting consistently above that sort of 19-20% threshold. That'd be quite good to see.
I need to start to get above my 14% threshold. That shouldn't be too difficult, he says. But so go on, I'll whiz you through it then. So yeah, Blackburn Rovers 1, Sheffield Wednesday 1, he came up with, which, mm-hmm. you know, good result for Wednesday if they could do that, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Cardiff City 1, Southampton 1, Coventry 3, Ipswich 1.
Right.
So I think you can see a little bit of the randomness coming out because it is respecting the home and away and the strength and all that. But, mm-hmm. you know, some of the randomness comes out like it did at the weekend.
Yeah.
Huddersfield 1, Swansea 3. And that would put the cat among the pigeons, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Leicester City 2, West Brom 2. I was a bit surprised at that.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, were you? I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't be that surprised to see it be a draw.
No.
Middlesbrough 2, Leeds 2.
That'd be a disappointing one for Leeds, wouldn't it?
Well, it would, but, you know, you could sort of see it. Norwich 2, Bristol City 0. That wouldn't surprise me.
No.
Queen's Park Rangers 1, Preston 0. That would be welcome for QPR.
Yeah, for sure.
Rotherham 0, Birmingham 1. That would be enough. That would do it for them.
That'd be a massive result, wouldn't it?
That's a big game for them. Stoke 1, Plymouth 0. Tight that too.
Mm.
Sunderland 3, Millwall 1. I don't know what to say about that particularly, but Watford 2, Hull 1. And that's your lot.
Gotcha.
But I'm equally as confident in that as I was last week. And look what happened.
Oh man. But that's the thing, isn't it? We've talked about sample sizes before, haven't we? And in one week sample size, it could be anything, couldn't it? But next week you could come back with a 42%. Or you might come back with a 3%.
I could, but it's unlikely, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, and I would like to look into the championship, you know, the predictability or otherwise, because it's another thing we say, isn't it? It trips off the tongue. Everybody says it. I'm not quite sure, but I think I might maybe look into that.
It would certainly be interesting, not to give you too much work, David, but compare it against the other 250. No. Compare it against maybe the Premier League or EFL 1 or EFL 2, something like that, to see, is it different? Because it's one of the things that we said at the beginning, wasn't it, that we enjoy the unpredictability. We like the drama. You know, that's what makes a movie interesting or makes the football interesting or the sport interesting. If you kind of know what the result is before you go into it, it kind of takes some of the fun away, doesn't it?
It takes all the entertainment away, really, doesn't it? Unless you're a fan of the team that needs the win and they win and, you know, you kind of feel confident. But otherwise, it's all about drama and, you know, unpredictability. So, yeah, I might try and do something like that, see how I get on.
Yeah, just see if it is different to other leagues. Because I personally think that the Premier League seems more predictable. But is that just my bias and I see the unpredictability of the championship more because I want to see it? Or is it actually
there you go.
True?
There's the $64,000 question. I would agree. I think the Premier League feels more predictable.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, we might see if we can find out.
But also this week, just gone, there was the awards for the EFL Player of the Season, Team of the Season, and all that sort of thing, wasn't there? Which got us thinking, well, perhaps it would be a good time for us to update our look at our own rankings and to also see, you know, who had risen, who'd fallen, and who would have made our Team of the Season as well. So what did you look at, David, and what did you find?
Yeah, we've been keeping this weekly record, haven't we, of all the games, all the outcomes, all the players. And we haven't talked about it that much, really, in recent episodes. We talked about it quite a lot, I think, at first. So it's high time, I think, that we at least had we dipped back into it. And as you say, we've got our game changer score we use, which is an indicator of how a player's attacking contribution compares to an average. And it's a little bit more complicated than that because it tries to take into account the attacking capacity of the team that the player plays for. So it tries to sort of smooth out some of the sort of variability. So if you're a player playing for Swansea, then if you're achieving a certain level of attacking contribution, that's probably as good as a player who plays for, say, Leicester, who achieves a higher level of attacking contribution, because in the overall context of how strong your team is, you know, your contribution is equally as good or maybe even better, even though the absolute numbers are not quite as high. You know, it's a bit like just if a striker for, you know, Huddersfield had scored 20 goals, it's arguably as good as a striker for Leeds scoring 32 goals because, you know, they don't create so many chances, they don't have so much possession and so on. So we tried to sort of address that with the game changer score. But what I've produced is a list of the top 50 players and their attacking contributions. And what this has done really is we've got the three roles, the striker, the chance creator, and the attacking support player. And if you're unfamiliar with these, you can go back over some of our previous episodes. We talk about these individually, but they're quite intuitive, you know, as to what they're really referring to. And depending on the player and what role he occupies, we take certain contributions that he makes as being more important than others. So if the player's an outright striker, then we're looking at goals and expected goals and how clinical he is on those. If he's a chance creator, then we're going to look at things like expected assists and maybe things like key passes and that kind of thing. And if he's an attacking support player, there are other metrics to do with chance creation and goal creation that we give those credit for. And so what we've done in this list is simply added together. We've combined all of these contributions and said which players are making the biggest contribution when you combine all of these, because we wanted a sort of a measurement of the overall attacking contribution made by the players. And we came up with it keeps a list automatically as we update our records every week. And we thought we'd have a look at the list and we'd compare the list as it is today with the list as it would have been halfway through the season, or I took after match day 21, because that's kind of half the number of games we had. Mm-hmm. So just to see if there were risers and fallers and any players that maybe have, you know, really kicked on and had a good second half of the season compared to the first, or even conversely, players that maybe have fallen away a bit. And out of that, we then started talking about perhaps we'd pick and this is a bit of fun, of course, but we just thought we might pick attacking the championship team of the season, or attackers. They're attackers of the season, really, I suppose, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the background of it. So we've got our list, and I don't think it's going to be a massive shock to most people to sort of hear who's on the list. I don't know if you want to start off.
I think I think, first of all, so the EFL Championship player of the season was Crescencio Somerville, wasn't it? Which,
yeah,
it's not a bad shout, is it? He's a, you know, outstanding player. He's not number one in our rankings, though, is he?
No, he's not, because, in the way that we've constructed this.
Yeah, the way we've put things together, the player who is now number one in our rankings was also number one in our rankings after week 21. So there's obviously a consistency there throughout the season. So is it fair for us to say that this player ranked number one would be our EFL Championship player of the season or attacking player of the season?
I think he'd be as good as anybody, wouldn't he, Tom?
Yeah, he would be. And that was Kiernan Dewsbury-Hall from Leicester City. So Leicester City's team attacking rank, they're fourth as far as team is concerned from attacking perspective. And he's come in with a game-changer score of 188%, which is pretty impressive, isn't it? And the fact that he's carried that all the way through the season, and he was number one halfway through and he's continued to be number one now, is a sign that he's had a pretty solid season.
You could say that. 38 90s. I mean, he's barely been off the pitch, has he?
Yeah.
I dare say he's probably started every game. I'm not sure, but he's played the equivalent of 38.3 90s. So, yeah, he's certainly been right in there, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he's been...
Which is a lot more football than number two and number three in our list, isn't it?
Well, number two, yeah. Dan James at Leeds has come in at number two. Uh-huh. And he's gone up 10 places since match day 21 in this list. So he's made a pretty significant rise. As you say, he's only played 27. Well, only. I mean, he's played 27 and a half 90s, the equivalent. So he's played a decent amount of football. There was a qualification in the list that they had to have played at least 50% of the available minutes to get on the list in the first place. And I know... Well, I'm pretty sure, just looking at the list now, that one of our favourite players, or two of our favourite players, don't think have made the list. And it's a shame, but, you know, you kind of have to have these parameters, otherwise you can't create a list. So we can give them honourable mentions. But Dan James, number two, but he's played 10 games fewer than Dewsbury Hall.
Yeah,
got a very good game changer score, 142%. I mean, these are solidly good figures.
Absolutely, and to be the first Leeds player on the list, I don't think many people have had him as number one or number two, because of course in the actual team of the season, you had both Rutter and Somerville in there, and Dan James didn't get a look in, did he?
No, he didn't. So it's just a question of how you. I guess, you know, how you construct these. What we've tried to do is just, as I said earlier, is look at all. So just to take us back very quickly, right at the very beginning of when we launched the pod, our sort of sentiment was that the way you get out of this division the right way is by winning games. And you win games by scoring goals, and you score goals by creating chances. It's all about the attack. And we backed that up because we looked at every single metric that you can collect over five full seasons in the Championship. We compared every single metric from passes and shots and headers and tackles, anything you like, to how closely they correlated with the team's position in the finishing position. And we found that it was all about the attacking. Those teams that won or finished high had strong attacks. And yeah, there are some anomalies in there, but they're few and far between. So we based the whole sentiment of the pod on the, you know, you've got to, we love it because we think that's what makes football exciting and entertaining. And you know, we know it's got to remain that way. And a few teams actually, you know, I'm listening to this week who are suffering a bit because even though they might be doing reasonably well in certain contexts, the fans are not necessarily having it. And we mentioned one earlier in Leicester, didn't we, where, they felt, maybe it's unfair, maybe it's, you know, inaccurate, whatever you want to say, but, you know, fans have their place in the game. And we all know there's been loads of examples of that where teams have done relatively well in certain regards, but it's where they're not entertaining, then there's something missing. So We started off on that basis and we said, look, we think we can prove it's about attacking. So what we've done here is we've taken all the attacking contributions that we already know lead to success, and we've applied these to the players that have played and we've in the teams and said, well, who is it in the team who are making these contributions? And this list is all about, you know, it's not a matter of our opinion. It's a list of the players who have made those contributions.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because when you look at it and in the actual team of the season for the championship, you've obviously got Somerville and Rutter in there, as we said before, and Somerville having played 36.1 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And Rutter having played 39.1 and Dan James only in sort of comparison, 27.5. So if Dan James had played 35 plus 90s, do you think we'd be thinking about him in the same way as we do Somerville and Rutter?
Well, it's a good question, isn't it? I mean, has it helped him, the fact that he hasn't played so many games, because he hasn't had to demonstrate that level of contribution for over as many games as some of his teammates? Or may it be that, you know, had he played more games, he might have even boosted him further? I don't know the answer, but this is why I think you need to pick. There needs to be a minimum amount of minutes to qualify, doesn't there? Mm. Otherwise, you get these sort of weird, you know, players who've only played six games or something and they had a purple patch and they're in there. So as much as anything, it is about consistency too, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, players that can do it week in, week out are very valuable to a team. So, when you're looking at recruitment, for example, one of the things you take a lot of interest in is not just the highs, but also the consistency of the players. You know, are they going to do their wonderful things a lot, or are they going to just do them when they're, you know, when they happen to be fit or when they happen to fancy it, as it were?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Well, number three then was Che Adams at Southampton.
Speaking of someone who wasn't maybe there that much during the season, he's just sneaked in, hasn't he?
He sneaked in because he wasn't in the top 112 we had before at match day 21, purely because he hadn't played the minutes. And he's played 21.7 90s. And I think that's literally like a fraction of a 90 minutes enough to get him into this list.
Yeah.
But he has been pretty strong.
Yeah.
You know, he's had a good sort of second half of the season, hasn't he? So, and I think he scored a couple last night, didn't he, when they beat Preston last night?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
I was quite pleased when I saw that because I thought, okay, there's a little bit of vindication for the way we're doing things. But, so he's in there at number three. And I wouldn't have imagined that he would have been in there. And I would have been I would have been guessing a long time, probably. No disrespect to him, because I think he's a good player. But it just shows you.
Yeah, yeah, I think, again, if you'd said to somebody, who's the Southampton player, attacking player at number three in our list, you'd have had Armstrong.
I think you would.
You know, straight away. But he's obviously not. It's Che Adams. But I like Che Adams as a player. I think his work rate's always good. He's always getting in there. He doesn't seem to be put off by missing chances and what have you. So I think he's a great championship level player. Whether he can make that jump up to the Premier League, if he needs to, of course. I'm not so sure, but he's a good guy to have around, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think so.
So who have been the biggest risers then, David, in this list?
Well, we already said about Dan James rising 10 places to number two, didn't we?
Yeah, and he's only the joint sixth highest riser in the list. So there are others that have risen a lot more than him. So,
well, you pointed one out to me, actually, when we were talking earlier, didn't you? Go on, I'll let you say.
Yeah, and that was Mr. Ellis Sims of Coventry, who's risen an excellent 53 places.
Incredible, that. I mean, since match day 21, he ended up in 28th place now. and he mm-hmm. was 53 places below that. It was just, I think so. And not to forget, Haji Wright has risen 18 places in this list, which I think is the third highest rise. So that's those two players between, you know, you'd look at, if you didn't know, you'd look at this list and think, I bet Coventry have had a good run. Because they're two sort of main attacking players, if you like, have between them risen, you know, huge number of places.
Absolutely.
And you'd be right as well, because they have had a good run.
Yeah, they have. No, they've been doing well. Not
so what are the other risers? We had, Juninho Bakuna at Birmingham had risen 25 places.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh Caroma at Huddersfield had risen 21.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't say that I've watched all of the games of all the players in the second half, but, you know, they're names that have obviously cropped up quite a bit. But going back to the list itself, we got down to number three. Number four is indeed Crescencio Somerville.
Yeah.
So he isn't far off, is he? And he's played 36.
Yeah.
0.190. So again, it's a very, very consistent output from Somerville, and you can see why. In fact, I think he was number two in the list up till match day 21, and he dropped a couple of places, partly because Adams has come in and he hadn't featured, and partly because his teammate Dan James had risen up from number 12 to number two. So they've all been there or thereabouts. And I'll let you tell us who number five is.
Number five is the guy that we both, to be fair, after about seven games or so, we said, well, there's no way that you can keep this scoring form up. And it was good old Sammy Smodix from Blackburn.
Yeah. He's been brilliant. He's been so good.
I mean, he's played nearly every minute, hasn't he? He's played 40.3 90s out of 42, which is quite outstanding.
Yeah.
And of course, he's scored bundles and bundles of goals all the way through the season as well.
I think he's got 30 in all competitions, hasn't he, now?
It's amazing.
And I don't think that he would have been somebody you'd have picked out as a if somebody had talked to you about, you know, strikers, real deadly strikers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've quite liked Smodics for a while, but I wouldn't have picked him out as a real prolific goal scorer.
And do you know that the thing is as well, if he moved to another team, I don't even think I'd be that confident in picking him out as a prolific striker there either.
So that goes well for him then, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. He'll be fine. He'll get 40 next season.
Sign him up then.
Yeah, he'll get 40 for someone. Because it just seems to be a thing that Blackburn do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
The guy that went off to Villarreal, he's back at Sheffield United now. I can't remember his name.
Brereton Diaz, yeah.
That's it. That's the one. Yeah. You've got Adam Armstrong. As well, who's gone down to Southampton.
Yeah.
And they just seem to get these guys that just score bundles and bundles of goals.
They do. Yeah, they do. He's done brilliantly well. And
he really has.
Yeah. Number five in this list. This is for overall attacking contribution. For outright goal scoring, you know, he's as good as anybody, isn't he?
Yeah.
This year, for sure. Then Adam Armstrong, indeed, at number six, up four places from earlier in the season. Grady Diangana, West Brom, at number seven.
Yeah.
And
new entry, isn't he, really?
He's a new entry, and I think because he hadn't played much after match day 21, I think because he'd been injured and he hadn't always even been in favour, really, at
AFCON
West Brom.
As well, didn't you? He went away for that.
He did have AFCON, that's true, yeah, and so he'd missed some of it. I think he's had from a production point of view, attacking contribution, the way that we measure it, he's been up there really, and he's delivered for sure.
No, he's been very good.
Gabriel Sara at Norwich, number eight. Jorginho Rutter at number nine, who'd fallen six places, so he was previously at number three, but again, 39 games, you know, it's, you've got to take that into account, haven't you?
Yeah.
And then Philogene at Hull, number 10.
I really like him. He's an
excellent he's done well for them. And there's all the usual sort of suspects, John Rowe, Morgan Whittaker, Nathan Broadhead, Abdul Fatawu, Omari Hutchinson, Jack Clark, Liam Diak, you know, lots of players that you'd probably pick up and say, yeah, they'll be on the list. And they are. We tried to make a team, didn't we? We tried to say...
We did indeed.
But you might have some different thoughts on this, because obviously with you being, you know, out there busy doing whatever it is you've been doing, eating gelato and all sorts.
My body weight in gelato has been
I might have... Well, you know, it's your holiday, mate. You've got to do it. But you might have some, you will have some thoughts, I've no doubt, on it. If you're trying to pick a team, it is very difficult. I just kind of thought, well, from our point of view, we might say, let's pick six players. Mm-hmm. Let's be attacking. Yeah. And let's say we'll have two outright sort of strikers, two chance creators and two sort of more supporting attacking players. And I don't know what you think of it, because I did send it through to you and just yep. as an example, but I don't suppose it looks pretty strong, doesn't it?
It does. It does look pretty strong.
I wouldn't want to be trying to defend against them.
No, honest. I mean, I'll take you through it. So attacking support player number one was our number one player in Kiernan Dewsbury-Hall.
Yeah.
And then a slight surprise player, I would imagine, for a lot of people, was Connor Chaplin at Ipswich.
Yeah.
So, you know, another guy who's had a really, really good season in a very attacking team, a surprise team for sure. So compared to the actual team of the season, Dewsbury-Hall was in the actual team of the season, but they had Gabriel Sarr in there, which is it's six of one, half a dozen the other, isn't it? I mean, Gabriel's had a fantastic season as well as Connor Chaplin. So guys who we had a little sort of discussion about, didn't we, that could be on the bench would be guys and could be considered a Finnezas. He's had a very, very good season.
He has, yeah.
And then the other player that we had on the bench was, in fact, Gabriel Sarr. So any of those four, I think, could do very well.
Definitely. I mean, it's hard to imagine an attacking team of the season not consisting of at least one Ipswich player, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, those top four teams, if you hadn't had one particular person had such a great season, I think it would have just been full of all of those players, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But our chance creators, no surprise, Crescencio Somerville was the first, and the second was Dan James. Both very, very solid seasons, but guys that we felt that could have come in there and done a pretty good job. Grady Dean Garner with a really, really strong second half of the season. And then also Omari Hutchinson has also been a guy that's come on strong, hasn't it? And really scored... Yeah. And not just scored goals, but scored key goals at key times as well.
Yeah, goals, I seem to.
Yeah,
at the top of my head, it seems to be, you know, goals right at the death. Where
he's the guy that seems to have been there to turn sort of losses into draws or draws into wins. So, and I think that counts for a lot for a player to still be putting himself in those positions when it's getting tough. Maybe that's what Leicester are struggling with at the moment, which is why their form's dropped. Maybe they need more guys like Omari Hutchinson, who knows?
Yeah, could be.
And then our strikers, no surprise that Mr. Smodic makes it as one of our strikers. And then Che Adams as our second striker.
Yeah, and I think you could pick from, I mean, it's a player that I really like, Josh Sargent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the only reason that he's not in that list is because he hadn't quite played the games. I think he might have even been number one if he'd played enough games.
I think you're probably right, to be honest.
So he really has had a terrific time in this sort of last sort of few months. So I wouldn't be at all disappointed if I was, you know, the manager of the team of the season to have him as one of my sort of outright strikers, would you?
No, for sure. No, I think he's, to be honest with you, even, and as I said, even though Sammy's had such a great, because we're on first name terms now, of course.
Yeah,
even
of course.
Even though Sammy's had such a good season, I still feel that I might even, I'd certainly put Josh Sargent ahead of him. I would consider putting Che Adams ahead of him, and I might even put another guy on our list here, Ellis Sims, ahead of him as well,
well,
because of
his
very, very strong end to the season.
It's hard to, if you were Ellis Sims, and we were picking this team and you wanted to be a part of it, you'd be wondering why you weren't, wouldn't you?
No, for sure.
So it is a, yeah, it's a real, it's just the fact that you've got 11 spaces in the team and you've got to pick 11 players, but there's a lot more contenders. But yeah, I agree. I think Sims would have had a decent case saying he'd done enough to get in there. But you look at these players and think, yeah, I wouldn't want to be trying to defend against this lot.
No, I think they'd do pretty well with a decent back four and a keeper behind them. I think they'd certainly get up in that top six. Well, probably not. Maybe we can just stick Amari Hutchinson as the goalkeeper. He can just pop out every now and again.
Yeah, rush backs.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that was good fun, David. I enjoyed that. Yeah, it was nice to go back and have a look.
Keeps you out of that blistering heat too, doesn't it?
That's right. Done
you a favour there.
But yeah, it's... Where was I? I don't know what I was going to say. No, I think we're pretty much done, I suppose.
You're a holiday, so yeah. We'll forgive you. It's all right.
Another yard of sangria, please, Barman.
Yeah,
lovely.
Good luck.
Okay, mate. Anything to add into that?
No, I think we're done. I think we're done for this week. Yeah.
Okay, everyone. Well, thank you for listening, and please do join us again next week to see if David is more accurate with his predictions. Do send in the comments you have about our team of the season, and if there's any changes that you would have made, please do pop them in there. Check out our YouTube channel, and all the links are in the description. And we'll see you next week. When we attack the championship. See you soon. Bye-bye.